The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. In today's Prime Minister's Questions, Boris Johnson battered off questions on everything from test and trace to schools reopening and questions of trust. James, what stood out for you?
I thought there were two policy shifts at PMQs today. The first is that Boris Johnson said that MPs who are shielding because of their medical condition or their age will now be allowed to vote by proxy. Up until yesterday, up until PMQs, they previously only been offered the chance to be paired. So, you know, they would join up an MP who was going to be on the other side of the issue, so but their absence would cancel each other out. They can now actually cast a vote by proxy. The second change came in response to a question from Jeremy Hunt when Boris Johnson said that all but kind of mailed in tests would be turned around within 24 hours by the end of the month. And that is a shift because last week at the liaison committee, Boris Johnson said he wasn't going to set any more targets. He has clearly decided to set one more. I thought the overall theme of PMQs is that the gloves are now off between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer, quite clearly. Keir Starmer is trying to basically attack the government essentially for incompetence. And Boris Johnson is trying to say to Keir Starmer, come on, be more constructive. The public want us to work together. And I think one of the reasons for that is that Number 10's focus groups and polling show that the public really don't want to see a return to partisan politics. So you've got Keir Starmer trying to basically say, wouldn't it be nice to get out of lockdown, but we can't because the government isn't making the right calls or isn't on top of the detail. And Boris Johnson saying, you know, these kind of questioning, that isn't constructive. All it's doing is chipping away at public confidence. I think we're going to see this as a theme for quite some time now. It's clearly the new battle lines at PMQs.
Katie, who do you think will come up on top on that new battle line? Because obviously Keir Starmer is also resting on the thought that now disillusionment with the government is probably higher than it was before in the aftermath of the Dominic Cummings affair. So do you think the focus groups will also say, actually, Keir Starmer has a point that we don't trust government as much as we did before?
Well, I think as a general, if your line of defence or the line you think is the most powerful is to say the country should work constructively, and on the other hand, Keir Starmer is trying to say the government has mishandled things, it's as much down to the government in the sense, do they provide enough evidence that lots of people just look at what's going on and think the government has mishandled things? Then clearly, I think there's going to be more sympathy towards the Labour leader at the moment. I think there's still a sense in government that people don't want the Labour leader to be obstructive. And again, you saw Keir Starmer even trying to suggest he wasn't being obstructive. At one point when Boris Johnson appeared to lose his temper slightly and suggest, you know, you keep coming here and criticising me. Keir Starmer said, actually, no, I think you're mistaking criticism for scrutiny, saying that he was providing scrutiny instead. And I think that's the line that Keir Starmer's team want to walk. I think that if there are lots of things on which you can, in a way, whack the government because they've made mistakes, it is easier to be heavily critical and still say it's scrutiny. So I think that's the balancing act in all of this. And I think that it was interesting in some of these things, which is Keir Starmer's trying to say that he is helping where he can. We had a to and fro about a letter he sent, which Boris Johnson didn't reply to. But then Boris Johnson's talked about a phone call in which Keir Starmer praised him. I could be wrong here, but I do think the details of their communication don't have that huge level of cut through. But you can both see him trying to use the communication to put forward this argument that each of them is being the bigger person in this whole debate. I think in terms of the short to medium term, I think ultimately how much bother Keir Starmer is going to cause Boris Johnson depends a lot on where he sits on various issues. So, for example, we know the Tory party is fairly unhappy now about a handful of things, from slow pace of lockdown easing, particularly the quarantine policy, which came up repeatedly in Prime Minister's questions on both sides of the House. So you had Tory MPs asking about it and also asking if if we keep this in place, are we going to have more funds going to the aviation industry? Something Boris Johnson wouldn't commit to. But then you also had a Labour MP suggesting that ultimately it was wrong to have this two-week quarantine, which is being discussed today in the House of Commons. Now, I think that today, parts of PMQs were bruising for Boris Johnson, but what actually give him a headache is if Labour moved to a policy on any of these issues where he's vulnerable in the Tory party, and you can suddenly have backbenchers working with Labour. At the moment, on the quarantine policy, Keir Starmer is not suggesting he doesn't back the government, but where I think Labour leader can cause the most bother is if on an issue like that, they decide that they do oppose what the government is doing. Because right now, looking at the Tory party, there are enough MPs annoyed about certain things that if you have the opposition MPs on the same in the same place, you could start to whittle that majority of 80 down and get things pretty close to the wire.
And James, as you write in the Times over the weekend, that majority of 80 is not as big as it really seems from the surface. Do you think that they'll have a U-turn on this quarantine policy?
I think so. I think the thing about this quarantine policy is that the government think that there will not be a vote on it until it comes up to be renewed at the end of the month after it's been in place for 3 weeks. And I think the government's hope is that by then it will have put some air bridges in place that will basically allow it to say that we are not all going to be standing on Scarborough Beach in the rain this summer, that people will be able to go and get some Mediterranean sun. But I think really, that yes, the summer holidays question is the tip of the spear in terms of attacks on the quarantine policy. But what the attacks on quarantine policy really are about is about the message it sends about Britain and whether this country is open for business or not. I think there is a real worry. The longer you talk to Tory MPs, members of the outer cabinet, you realise what they are really worried about is a double whammy here, which is what their worry is that the UK is going to come out very badly in terms of excess deaths during this coronavirus pandemic. But then the UK will come out of lockdown very slowly, and so it will take a bigger economic hit than other Western European countries as well. And that's what they worry about. I mean, that's what really is animating this opposition to the quarantine policy, is that they worry that it's going to deepen the economic damage done to the country. So the government won't be able to turn around in 2024 and say, okay, the country fared badly during the coronavirus pandemic, but the economy has recovered rapidly afterwards. I mean, that is their worry, is that the slow pace of lockdown easing could lead to this, you know, to this kind of 1-2 effect.
Katie, you write on Coffee House today that one of the reasons the government is so keen for MPs to return is the difficulties in whipping backbenchers over issues, contentious issues like these. Now that they've been back, well, on the second day now, how is the mood in the Conservative Party at the moment?
Well, I think after queuing in a total, not per vote, for several hours, to the point that they spent most of their afternoon trying to work out this new voting system, so the mood isn't the best I've ever discovered it to be. I think that ultimately there are plenty of Tory MPs who are a bit fed up already, and I think doing a socially distanced conga line through the Palace of Westminster didn't necessarily add to that. I mean, yesterday, just after the voting had happened, plenty of Tory MPs who had actually voted for this measure were quite quick to say that it was a bit of a disaster, in some cases using expletives. But I think part of the reason that it did pass is because people are picking which battles they're going to fight. And I think there is a bit of a sense, I gather, that they don't think the system's really going to last the test of time, in part because if the opposition wanted to have fun, I think, well, fun depending on your own definition of it, they could go for lots of divisions in a single day. If you had, I think, 8 votes... Obviously, this depends somewhat on the speaker, but if you had 8 votes, I think, in one day, I wonder if that system would still be seen as something which is could be continued. Now, there's another question in the sense of, does the opposition want to make fun of a system at a time of national crisis still? Because people say, well, you're wasting everyone's time by forcing all these votes. So maybe it will endure a bit longer. That is adding to people's annoyance, but it's not a huge issue. But I think, generally speaking, there just isn't this... I think there is a sense that Number 10 do need a slight change of tack in terms of party management, in the sense of actually having more party management, more of a line to certain MPs. I think if you look at the... I mean, we are now obviously still in lockdown to a degree, but if you think about Parliament, it is the end of the lockdown lots of MPs have been having over the past couple of months. And I think in that time, people have got more frustrated with the general operation. And I think that on a range of issues, we've seen how outspoken these MPs can be. Something I wrote about a while back is, you know, we're not even there yet, but if for example, I've had MPs say to me, if we get to a point where you need to have tax rises to help deal with some of the costs of coronavirus, perhaps it would actually be hard to get through this party. And they pointed to the Red Wall MPs, the new intake, and suggested that the slight problem here is a lot of these new MPs didn't spend the past, you know, few decades planning, you know, for high office. So they're a slightly different tack is often required to get into play ball. And I think we've seen that in the past couple of weeks with how, with the Dominic Cummings row last week, it was actually quite a lot of the 29 intake that were quite quick to either go public or be the ones on the WhatsApp groups really pushing their concerns. Now, I think new MPs are always a bit more sensitive to voter backlash than I suppose more seasoned MPs, but clearly I think it's an added challenge when it comes to the general sense of the party.
And James, in other news, new figures from Scotland today shows that actually more people have died in Scottish care homes because of coronavirus than in hospitals. So the care home problem is one that Scotland is having too.
So, I think this is one of the issues here, which is Nicola Sturgeon last week at First Minister's Questions promised a public inquiry into the handling of coronavirus in Scotland, including the care homes issue. And I think the care homes issue in Scotland is a reminder that it's not just Boris Johnson's government that is struggling with this issue. You know, it is a problem, it's a massive problem in Scotland too. And I think essentially the issue here is that that there was not sufficient testing of people going into care homes at the beginning of this crisis, and that essentially the desire to kind of, there was a kind of frantic desire to free up hospital capacity, and that unintentionally looks like it may have pushed the virus right across the UK into care homes. And I think that is going to be an issue. And I think the question of why didn't they wait until people had got a negative test result for coronavirus back before returning to their care home is going to be one of the big features of any public inquiry, both Scottish and UK wide.
And Katie, finally, a new report from Public Health England that was published yesterday shows that ethnic minority people are at more risk of dying from coronavirus. Can you tell us about this story and what it means?
Yes, so the government were criticised after reports that they were delaying the publication of this report, but it did come out yesterday. The general gist of it is that people from ethnic minorities are at higher risk of dying from coronavirus, but where it has been criticised is while it has these findings and points to data as to, you know, which groups in society are the worst affected so far from what we've learned, it doesn't follow it up with specific actions in order to remedy it. So at the Daily press conference yesterday, for example, the health secretary was asked whether you should add to the list of people who should be sheltering groups that are worst affected. Now, we haven't got an immediate action plan, but what they have done is put Equalities Minister Kemi Badenoch on this, so I think it's something to watch out for in the coming weeks.
And of course, this comes in the wake of George Floyd's death and the backlash to that in America and in the UK, so sensitivity is needed. James and Katie, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes, and do leave us a rating or a review. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.